beginning to look a lot like Boogaloo! Welcome back, everyone! This is season 4! It is Holidamned! The Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo guys, which is us, are totally damn doing holiday movies this year. Okay, I am 8th Dan Stanadu at your service. Happy to be joined by my good friends. My good friend Jack Hall. Jack Hall, how you doing?
Sup, Twinkle Toes.
Twinkle Toes. Wow, that's crazy. All right, moving on. We got James Cotta.
I think this movie actually counts as Canucksploitation.
Canucksploitation, even better. It was filmed in Canada, so that's awesome. All right, and moving on to the last of our quartet, bringing up the rear as he brought up earlier. Oh yeah, Nick Boxer.
Greetings and slayulations. That did not come out like I wanted it to.
All right. Well, we got Santa's Sleigh coming up for you today. So that's a movie. And we're going to talk about it.
Yes, technically, it yes.
It is long enough to work out as a movie.
I really hope we have some movie facts on this one. I had never heard of this film before.
Really?
I saw no production stuff about it. This has actors in it that I know. Going off the title, I actually assumed this was like a forgotten movie from the 70s. This is not that old. I was mystified. I don't know how I missed this.
2005. I don't know how you did either. It was for a while there. It was a staple on. I guess at the time it was Spike. Now it's Paramount. But before it was. Yeah, it was a staple on there during the holidays.
Was it a WWE film?
No, nothing to do with it.
Huh? Spike plays something during the holidays besides Star Wars.
Well, back then.
Okay, that's before my time.
See, you can tell that this is not a WWE movie because it has one of the greatest opening scenes ever, which no WWE movie ever has.
So true.
Anyone like to know what happened in this film?
Yes.
I'd love to.
Yes. Please.
So would I.
Please, Nick, tell us.
Let's gather around the fireplace for Nick's soapbox.
All right. This movie takes place in a small town with a surprisingly large Jewish community in it. However, everyone seems to be anti-Semitic for no apparent reason. And Santa comes down and starts killing some people, also for no apparent reason.
What? There's a total reason why he's killing
people. Dude, you completely...
Okay, there was...
Stan, please, Nick, you're not doing the synopsis. Stan, give this movie a synopsis, please. I cannot let that stand.
Okay.
That was a haphazard effort.
I was going somewhere with that, but okay.
Okay, fine. Okay, all go right. Somewhere.
Yep, finish it off.
I wasn't going anywhere good. You might as well. It's over now.
So, I mean, the core concept of this movie is that 1,000 years ago, Santa Claus, who was an evil bastard, was basically lost a curling match with an angel, and for 1,000 years he had to be nice. And so the 1,000 years is up, so Santa is back to being evil again, and he is going, actually, as we find out, looking for that angel. And that's the part of the reason that he's terrorizing hell, the township of hell.
That's history. That's not motivation.
And even you are missing the fact that Santa was the result of a virgin birth. There was only ever two virgin births, Jesus Christ being one, the other one being Santa, a virgin birth from Satan.
Yes.
Still no motivation mentioned.
Really? I thought...
If he's Satan's kid, he's going to be evil!
I thought that it was more than enough to know that Santa doesn't have to be good anymore. He's evil. Therefore, he's killing people. Really, that's in more than enough motivation for me. But
they explain that because he's tired of people whining. He's had 1,000 years of people sending him letters whining. And he's finally just had it. He's like, I have waited so long to get even with these people to send me these letters. Also evil. But
okay. But yeah, I also had a problem
specifically
with
because people just send him these, you know, snotty little letters all the time, and he just can't stand any of them.
Okay. Okay, can you explain to me why our hero, the teenage kid,
yep, Nicholas Yule, Yule's son, means son,
is able to detect the murders are being done by Santa Claus? That, I mean, he finds one Jew stabbed with a menorah, and all of a sudden he goes, you know what? I'm going to believe my grandpa's crazy stories, which I've ridiculed up
no,
to this.
No.
That's not true.
That is not at all the way it went. Did you watch the fucking film?
I did. His grandfather told him the crazy story, and then someone said, I saw a Santa leaving the scene of the crime. Like his boss gets killed, and then someone says, but I saw a Santa leaving there after he got killed.
I don't care. I'm not going to think it's the real Santa Claus just because gets stabbed with a menorah.
If I just hear that Santa is an evil whatever and is going to be here and killing people, and then all of a sudden a Santa Claus kills people, I'm not going to – and the character wasn't suddenly like, yep. The character was more like, wait, now I gotta think this is possible. I got to explore it some more.
Because
there's a lot of WTFs in this, but this is not one.
I can't
also
believe
it's written down in a very old book.
I can't believe that we
know that if it's in a book,
we are arguing the higher level implications of Santa being evil in this instead of the fact that, like, you know, Mr. Green, played by Saul Rubinek, got killed by Santa with a menorah.
Who gets killed by a menorah unless it's an evil Santa? Yeah. Through the neck, stuck to a wall.
I love that they got Saul Rubinek, possibly the most Jewish man that ever lived. He's the most Jewish man in Hollywood, and that's like, it's saying a lot.
Like, every single actor in this film, every single main character, the actor is actually Jewish. So,
but honestly, the opening scene is just so classic because you have no idea if you're watching the right movie. I mean, it opens with James Caan and Fran Drescher and Rebecca Gayhart and Chris Kattan in his only good appearance ever. And, you know, and it's this idea as you're watching them, and it's this grouchy family sniping back and forth, and it's just
what happened to me. Like, I was watching this, like, because this is on YouTube. I was told it's on YouTube, so I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I go on YouTube and I see it's only 74 minutes or whatever, and I'm like, oh, that seems short, you know. But I'm like, so I start watching it, and it's James Caan and Fran Drescher and all this stuff. I'm like, oh, I'm watching the wrong movie. So I turn it off and go find it elsewhere to find. And now I'm searching the times and I'm finding all sorts of different times and none of them are 74 minutes. And
you know, Jack, I just assumed that you knew about this movie.
No, here's the thing about it is it was on Spike. I picked it because it was on Spike and I had heard about it. And I've seen clips on Spike at a few times, but I never watched the full thing because it looked too awesome to only catch a few clips.
No, I assumed you worked on this thing.
No.
Because, I mean, Santa Claus, Yeah, 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 the song that's playing at the strip club, I figured you wrote that.
Wish, dude. This movie had some great music. Had some fantastic tunes. Oh, and a lot of
really movies. Didn't.
Yeah.
Some really bad music.
It had some awesome songs.
Santa Claus, awesome. Yeah, 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 repeat.
I didn't say that
seven
one.
7 times.
I didn't say that one, but it was perfect for strippers. And there was, anyways, the point being that I literally turned this movie off and went, and finally I looked it up and I go, what's a movie? I got to see this movie. This looked like a great movie. It's not Santa's Sleigh, but whatever movie has Fran Drescher and Rebecca Gayhart and James Caan, I got to watch it. Let me Google those guys in the same, and then I Google it and it's like, oh, no, Santa's Sleigh. I am watching the right movie. like it was, but it's just such a classic, awesome, so much death and the kills at that beginning, the way Santa kills them, are just hilarious and inventive.
Oh, Actually, I think all the kills are actually quite creative in this movie.
Yeah.
And they said some body weird
count,
stuff.
The holiday chair body count trivia, 32.
Wow. That's great. Much higher than I would have thought.
Because, yeah. I mean, they have some creative kills in here. Like, you think Santa's going to stab the guy with the candy cane with the sharp end. But no, he sticks the round end through the guy's head.
Yep.
The stripper pole. I like the electrocution angle. Not to mention, yeah, there are a bunch of great kills. The kills work in this film.
The kills are fantastic.
This is one of those movies where it really takes you so many different places, but unlike, say, the Hebrew Hammer movie, this one, when you're going down someplace, it's just like, wow, I would never have thought of that as a way to go. Now that's not to say that it's a perfect movie, because it is certainly not a perfect movie. I mean, the strip club scene as a whole, you could completely cut that out, and
you would hate you.
Well, sure,
hate you so much.
But
it was my favorite scene.
Oh yeah, but you would be
for
none the wiser that it was actually missing in that regard.
Well, no, it has a little something to do with the pastor played by Dave Thomas.
Yeah, pastor, but generally you could cut the pastor out for the most part and not really notice that he's missing.
That'd be a crying shame there, Dave
Thomas.
Well,
of course, because it's Dave Thomas. And that's not the point. The point is not that something, you know, about they just add random things.
Hearing Doug McKenzie walk into a strip club and go, "Hey, terrific tits, just had me."
And Bill Goldberg is actually pretty good as Santa Claus. He's got a real decent. I would consider him good casting, because he's got the right look, and I like the fact that he's got the big muscles. He's got that feel of an evil, mean Santa Claus. Biker,
he was he was clearly having a blast, and you could tell, which is hilarious, because I know in his wrestling career, he was miserable and a pain in the ass to be around. People hated him, and he hated everybody. And so it's like this is the opposite. Like the end, you see all these bloopers and whatever and behind the scenes stuff. And it was clear he was having a blast and relaxed and like a totally different persona than he knew of. But yeah, let's face it, there's not many roles this guy could do well, but he sure as hell did this very well.
Yeah, this is a movie that I would be very happy to see a sequel for, because
and they don't. They totally set it up.
Yeah,
and nothing. I know. 13 years later, nothing. I'm like, what the hell?
It's funny, because there's a lot to the movie, but there's not necessarily a lot to the movie. It's great stuff though, because he's got a Zamboni. So Santa riding on a Zamboni, attempting to kill Grandpa and the kids. This is when they've established that Grandpa is the angel from 1,000 years ago. And the curling, and now here's that moment for me, because I am a curling fan. So when I'm watching this,
what other movie curling?
When I'm watching this, and I'm like, there's no way that they could throw the rock like that, because there's no hack there for them to put their feet in.
You know, well, that was your problem. You're like, that part's not logical.
Yeah. I can't get
this past far, no this, farther.
This curling part here. Because, you know, there's a pit to hell down at the other end. But, man, where the fuck is the hack for them to get there? You know, they went as far. I mean, Santa even used the straw broom for it. So that was good work. But no hack. But this movie, there's a lot of. There's a lot of stuff in it. One of the weirdest things I actually found was the relationship between Nicholas Yulson and the girl that he works with, Mary Mac McKenzie, and the fact that she's this character who's got a father who's a hunter, and so she's way tougher than he is, and the whole time he's just basically kind of a wuss, and there's almost a role reversal thing going on with them, which that might be the only thing that gets a little bit kind of played out by the end for me.
I think if the actors actually committed to that, it could have worked. I actually liked that angle until it was clear neither actor believed it.
Well, you know, it's a weird thing because I thought one of the things about this film was I mean, they're teenagers. They're 16 years old in the movie, and both of them looked like 16 year olds. Where I'm used to movies and TV shows where the guys are 16 and they look 31 because they're actually 47. You know,
where Robert Culp is actually trying to play the teenager.
The lead character, the actor, he was 20, and the lead female that you're talking about, she was 24. But I don't know. Yeah, there wasn't the great chemistry between them. That was like, if you're looking at it from a pure film standpoint, they looked 16, but they didn't have that spark on screen for sure. By the way, I just like to say I've looked it up, and the movie, the song in the strip club that you're complaining about there, Nick, is called Pussy Town, written by Matt Ford and Glenn Diamond, performed by Machine Gun Fellatio. So go fuck yourself. Perfect song for a strip club.
They can name a band, they can't write a song.
What's funny is many. It's an actual real band.
You said a whole bunch of names, and I have no proof you didn't just make them all up.
Machine Gun Fellatio, Australian alternative rock band formed in 1997.
See, that doesn't prove anything. You're just continuing to say words.
Continuing to say words. Oddly enough, we do a lot of that. We continue to say words.
I'm the horse in the race. I don't even remember the song.
It's in
a strip club, and there's naked women everywhere. I'm like, the soundtrack. This is good. I close my eyes and really focus on the soundtrack.
In fairness, I'm going with Nick on this one. For the most part, I actually found the soundtrack to be really kind of annoying.
Oh, man. Had Gorgor Girls and had some great stuff.
Maybe if I was actually listening to the Gorgor Girls by themselves, I perhaps might find them more enjoyable. I just thought during the movie, it took me out of the movie more than it helped me stay in the movie. So
can we go back? I don't think we spent enough time. Let's forget about the music. Can we go back to the opening scene? Because the question is it the greatest opening scene you've seen this year, or is it the greatest opening scene you've seen in your whole life? Those are your only two options.
That opening scene is amazing. Just the Rebecca Gayheart, who I don't think gets enough play, and James Caan just being like, he's just become such a caricature of himself.
This movie, not to give away my WTFs in any way, shape, or form, but literally I went, James Caan, what the fuck is he doing?
I feel like they just filmed
James Caan.
I'm just assuming this is James Caan's living room. Like I'll do it, but I'm not leaving the house. I'm going anywhere for it.
You can bring them all over here, but we're doing it here.
You want to film it here? Or you film it here.
That is exactly how he'd say it too.
But you know, it's just so great because it's all these people that you look at and these name actors and Fran Drescher being annoying Fran Drescher. And so it's fantastic.
I do like how you say actors and Fran Drescher. more succinctly, it's actors and Fran Drescher and Chris Kattan, but...
Chris Kattan is not an actor, and I'll consider him lower than a Fran Drescher.
I was elated when I saw this scene, and they're both killed so quickly and so well.
Well, they managed to get in the Fran Drescher laugh just enough to remind you why you would want her killed.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, all Chris Kattan has to do is open his mouth, and you're like,
oh, yeah,
somebody kill him.
it's a funny thing. I have an immediate reaction to Chris Kattan, and I don't even need him to speak. It's always, I don't ever remember him. I always go, who's the Weasley guy I don't like? And then I remember it's Chris Kattan.
Yeah, I still get him confused with Jimmy Fallon. I'll be honest with you. I can't tell the two of them apart, and I don't like either one. I didn't expect that to be such a controversial statement.
That was more of a mic drop than I was really expecting there.
Yeah, I don't know.
A guy who has two lines in the film.
Where do you go from there? I don't know.
I think that Jack has just said what we're all feeling.
Apparently. Now,
those were some well-placed cameos, but can we talk about the not well-placed cameo? The tiny Lister cameo.
Holy fuck.
What the hell was that?
WTF moment, but
that was awesome.
So
he stops into our hero stops into a gas station, the eat here, get gas,
which is that's my WTF right there. Like, eat here, get gas. I'd like it
pointed out that in the credits he's listed as Tiny and the character gas attendant, and that's it. That's all. That's all that was in there.
Was he friends with Goldberg?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know, but I don't think so.
He was in Canada just hanging.
Yeah, it was before he was in jail for his tax fraud, maybe, I guess. So he could still travel across the border. I don't know. But yeah, this character shows up. He enters this gas station. The scene goes on for what, about 3 days? And then
they talked a lot about gum.
Gum, yes.
They talked a lot about
smoking gum, right?
Yeah, because he has weird gum. Yeah, what kind of gum was it? Yeah, it was
smoking gum.
Yeah,
it's just like, I've never had this before. Maybe it'll be interesting.
Because he asked for
he says it might be hot. Character
needed gum right there for some reason.
Because at the gas station, they hadn't got their gum shipment because the driver who would bring the gum shipment got killed in the strip club massacre.
But here's the part that I don't get. So Tiny Lister shows up. You know this guy.
That's the part you don't get.
Okay. Yeah, shut up. Exactly. So Tiny Lister. And so he shows up. He's fine. He's in town right after Santa Claus has shown up and is killing all these people, right? And the character, the lead character, says to him, you're new. I haven't seen you around here before. And he's like, I just got into town. So you think it's set up that he's actually like this demon hunter or something, so that he'll be back. It's set up so that he's there just by coincidence at this time when he's never been there before, and it's going to lead to something else. And you never see him again. It leads to nothing.
Yeah, because he just says that he's like a guy who moved here because it was too busy or something like that.
It totally feels like he's set up as some sort of secret, like, you know, hunter that, or something like that. But I was looking forward to
a Goldberg Tiny Lister fight.
No kidding. Because, like, dude, that is one of the moments ever. Like, this movie, I know, don't get me wrong, I know it only came in at like 80 minutes or something like that. But take out this scene and it's only 40. And it leads to nothing. It's a weird, weird thing.
This movie is chock full of those, though. It's chock full of scenes that go really nowhere, that have very loose threads that tie them together into the story. But that's okay. Because at the end of it, you're like, this is one of those, the whole is probably greater than the sum of its parts.
I agree.
Yeah. I think we better get to scoring then.
It sounds like the time to do that.
All right. Do we remember how to do this? Okay. So
what? What? Scoring? What?
So in our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate every film we talk about in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category we have is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
Well, there's a goodly sum of schlock in this movie. Wow. I mean, from the opening, of course, which is so random, like there's so many different random things. The cop being in the cop shop and stuff like that, and just the different elements in there. And when the officers come by to investigate Saul Rubinek's death, and they're completely anti-Semitic, and that's very strange and schlocky, and everything in this movie seems quite schlocky to me. I'm going to go with an 8.
Yeah, it was schlocky, but it wasn't over the top. I mean, look at the movies we've seen so far. I'm only going with a 6 on this one.
Yeah, and I'm going even lower because, again, it is very much... I'm going 5 because it is very much exactly what it wanted to be. It doesn't... So it's, you know, it doesn't... Is it a smaller budget film? Sure. But does it, like, embrace that smaller budgetness? No, it's just kind of a movie. You know, like it's a crazy movie, but it's the crazy movie they wanted to make.
seven.
No rebuttal to that.
I like that they burned Fran Drescher's face off. That was great.
Hers is the best death of all of them. He takes a lighter thing, one of those that you used to light candles, one of those big ones, you know, and then takes what is it, some, like some wine or something, spits it in her face, her hair goes on fire, she sits there screaming, and then he takes her, what does he do, like drown her in some sort of soup or something?
It would be the punch.
It's a punch, or, well, it was
it's the big punch bowl.
Is it a punch bowl? I thought it was like a metal pot.
No, it's a punch bowl.
Eggnog or something, like, yeah, it was awesome.
I don't think anyone drank any eggnog in this movie. They should have. Maybe things would have turned out better had they been drinking nog. All right, the next category we have is called More Heart Than Budget.
Now, this is one of those cases where I'm willing to see what you've said about the first one there, Jack, and I'm willing to go a little bit lower on this one because, again, you're right. They made the exact movie that I think they intended to. Other than Bill Goldberg, like Bill Goldberg is the guy who gives this movie the heart for some odd reason, because as you talked about, he does seem like he's just having a lot of fun.
I mean, don't get me wrong, he's totally vicious. For a guy that was a good guy his whole life and loved to be being a wrestler because he was a hero to kids and that was really important to him, that he could go to like children's hospitals and visit them and lift up their lives, he really enjoyed being a homicidal maniac.
Well, I mean, this is the movie to enjoy doing that in, because it is so over the top that you can completely get there. I'm going to give it I'm going to go down the middle of the road with 5.
Yeah, I see where you're going with that. I'm rating this a 5, but for sort of a different reason. I actually think there's a lot of heart in this movie in the scenes that somebody really wanted to make. I mean, that opening scene, somebody really wanted to kill Fran Drescher. Somebody really needed to make a movie with a cannibalistic reindeer in it. Somebody really needed to do all this stuff. It's the scenes in between they didn't care about. So 5, right up the middle, half heart, half not.
And I'm seeing it totally different. Don't get me wrong. They made, like I say, I don't think in any way they had to overcome their budget. I don't know what the budget was for this film. It wasn't huge, but it was clearly big enough that they could have special effects that were adequate for what they did. You never thought the effects were bad or anything. Everything was good. So I don't know. It doesn't feel like the smallest budget film. But you know what? For a horror film, and it's a comedy film, like it's loaded with heart. It's really a very, very pure film in a lot of ways. Like it's like, you know, it's little things that they did, like it's a comedy film and it's got, you know, all this violence and nudity and whatever, but it's also got like, what it does that Hebrew Hammer didn't do, for instance, is take a moment where it like just explains like some backstory, and it's got the animated sequence, and just takes its time to take these little moments and give those to you. So, I mean, I have a 9 for this, plus the fact that Bill Goldberg actually met his wife while playing this role. I think that deserves a little.
Is she Canadian?
Yes. I think she is, yeah. I think so.
What was the number there?
9.
9. That's
all. Did that right go then on too long for you?
No, it just got. I got distracted by like he met his wife on the when he was doing the movie. I'm like, was if she also in the movie? Like
I don't know where. I think
she, is she,
I,
but, she yeah. just from picturesque Wetaskiwin, Alberta.
How I can look it. I can actually look it up.
Did they start dating then? Did he fly her to LA? Like, I mean, there's just the romance is, and talk about romance. The two of these folks together.
Okay, Bill Goldberg met his wife while dressed as a murderous Santa Claus. You score it. By the time you're done, I'll have this.
Please tell me they met in a Tim Hortons.
She was doing stunts. It was a strip club scene. I go into the strip joint. There's like 50 naked girls there. And who do I come out with as my wife? The only girl who had clothes on. I'm Santa Claus. I come into the place. I kill a couple of people on my way in. Then the bartender and a couple of patrons I don't like very much. So they chase me out throughout the bar. I hop up to the table, then I hop up to swing. Well, she's sitting on the swing. So I'm in an extremely precarious situation when you would look at the logistics of me hanging from the swing. She's sitting on the swing. Then I was very uncomfortable. And being Goldberg, I mean, you're supposed to be the right guy, right? So I'm sweating more than I am now. I couldn't even look at her. And she taps me on the shoulder and she goes, "Are you all right, buddy?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." But I couldn't look up, obviously. And she says, "Usually before a guy gets this close to me, he buys me a beer first." And I look up at her and I say, "I love you."
I'd like to say sweet story, but...
That is awesome. I'm sorry. That's awesome.
Well, I was going to rate this a 6, and then I heard your story, so I'm giving this a 6.
Some good work there. Good work.
I did like that. I mean, they focused on the whole practical gift speech of the best gift to give is a practical one. I thought that was like,
I could use a hard drive then for Christmas. Give me something very practical. Yeah.
All right, our next category we call What the Fuck Moments.
All right. Well, there's a lot of them. Obviously, for me, the eat here, get gas just made me laugh. It was a total what the fuck. Like, just seeing it on the sign and then seeing it on Tiny Lister's chest, that's funny stuff for me. There's an old lady that goes into the deli right off the bat. And she is just completely mean in every way, shape, and form. And it is so... there's nothing in the movie that can introduce me to this character at that moment. And so I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And I already said that after watching the opening scene. But it's great. And then when you talked just briefly about the animation sequence. And... it's awesome in its what the fuckiness, just because it's that Rudolph kind of animation style, and it's the origin of the
Goldberg
Santa. Oh yeah, it looks totally shitty. But it's just so out of nowhere in that moment, and it's just like, wow, what the fuck? And then of course a Zamboni, which seems completely reasonable now, but at the moment, wow, that just came out of nowhere. I love the fact that every time they do a scene change, it's not just, they don't just kind of, you know, gradually build into the scene. No, they just pretty much like, bam, right into the scene, right into the next scene. So for that, I'm going to give this a 9 for what the fuck.
Yeah, the WTFs are all over the place and they're good. So 8.
I'd like to start it off by saying the line, two 10-year-old kids go to open their present, and I say to the mother and father, hey, mom, can we open our motherfucking present? Very casually. And nobody, they don't get in trouble. Nothing.
Can we open
our motherfucking presents? Very relaxed. This is just a normal.
If Van ever said to me, hey, Dad, can I open my motherfucking present? I'd be like, what?
You would be so proud.
Were you watching Santa's sleigh without me? Because that's not cool, man.
And then they open up the presents and they both explode. And grandmother looks at the camera and goes, fuck.
And their head's like a bum, 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 bum.
Sal Rubinek gets killed by Santa, stabbed through the neck and impaled against a wall. The kid is at the gas station. The gas station attendant, Tiny, has this police scanner going. It says there's violence at the gas station. He says, hey, that's where at the shop. He goes, that's where I work. He runs across town to it, runs inside, and there's violence at the police station on the police scanner, and there's nobody in there. Nobody in there. He beat the police on foot to get there. Nobody's hanging around, just this guy on the wall. He walks up to the guy on the wall. Sal Rubinek, stabbed through the neck. Blood coming out of his neck, impaled on a wall, and he opens his eyes. And he's not dead yet. The police officers finally come in. They look at him because they saw some Hasidic Jews saw Goldberg walking out, or Santa walking out. They tell the police. The two officers, one very tall, one incredibly short, for no reason. For no reason. They question everybody. They say to the kid, we're going to take you downtown. Then he tells his other officer, he points at the Hasidic Jews and says, take the Amish guys along too. I don't know what more you want to tell us.
Jack, we can pause here if you need to, take a break and, pop a pill or.
Nine.
I love those little bits in the film. That asked the Amish guys if they saw anything on the bed, which just friggin' slayed me. And there's a bit, the whole movie has this swing from earnest Christmas movie to slasher movie that just jumps wildly back and forth. And there's a bit where Robert Culp, who I love Robert Culp, is playing the grandpa. He's walking upstairs. One of the stairs squeaks and he says, sorry about that. And then the kid goes, what are you apologizing for? And then realizes that his grandpa's farted in his face. He's like, I don't know. I said I was sorry. And it's so out of place with everything that happens in the entire movie.
A climactic scene in this movie is curling! Curling!
I don't think you can get a bigger what the fuck than the problem is solved by curling. For our Canadian and Norwegian listeners, curling played incorrectly. Yeah. It's curling. It's curling not played right.
Where the heck was that hack?
That's right.
But the goal of curling is not to get to the edge of the circle and not touch it. That's not actually what you're supposed to
do. You're not supposed to. In the Olympics, do they have the big hole to hell in the Olympics?
Suddenly I'd watch the Olympics.
That's why the Olympics are so expensive. Yeah. You got to go to a new city, dig another new hole to hell. All right, I'm also giving this a 9 for what the fuck moments. Our next category is called memorable moments.
Memorable moments. Oh, God, there's so many what the fucks that I'm not completely sure what will be memorable besides the what the fuck moments. I'm going to remember how much I enjoyed the movie. But I think for me, the most memorable moment is absolutely the opening scene. I will never forget that. I've been telling everybody about it, trying to get Shanna, my wife, to watch that opening scene because I want to share that with the world. So for me,
Shanna Do,
that's right. I am going to give that one a 6 just on the strength of the opening scene.
That's my favorite. Shanna Do.
Well,
sorry. Go on. This is my favorite episode ever.
I can wait.
I don't even remember what Stan's number was.
6.
Six. Yeah, All right.
He's scary.
Settle, people. Everyone settle. All right, sound speed.
He's scary, but
but educational.
I give up. 7. Come on.
Get educational. Don't forget. No, don't. That's of course, you know. But yeah, you kiss like a girl. You kiss like a guy. But in reverse.
Oh God! And I didn't even bring up the Native American guy with the smoking with the
thing. None of us did. That's in the WTF. They just decided to have the guy with the voice box.
Dances with Wolves comes out.
I couldn't even understand what the hell he was saying. It didn't matter because it was just like, what the fuck. Oh.
I kind of felt like that actor actually did need that voice thing. It was like they hired him, got him to set, and they're like, what do you mean he can't talk? That's not going to work at all.
He was probably hired from a YouTube audition. Or a skate audition.
That guy was in Dances with Wolves. That guy was in like 1,000 movies.
Oh, God.
This would get for the strip club scene alone, and him getting up to the bar that the pole that they dance on, and him taking out
the cleaning solution and spraying it down and like his expression and
wiping it down.
His expression just before he grabs it, like ugh, like I wouldn't touch that. Like that's awesome. That is an amazing scene.
How about the strippers' names? You know, like they were hilarious.
I love that the preacher reads out their names in church the next day.
Yes, and they're all like the most lewd names ever, like Dixie Rection. Like was one of them. But that opening scene alone is 1,000. So how can you not give this a 10?
We should talk more about Dave Thomas.
Oh yeah. So
everyone should talk more about Dave Thomas. Dave Thomas was fantastic in this. Is the I don't know, was he a priest? Was he a mayor?
Pastor.
Like
what
was
the he pastor. Supposed to be?
In the credits, it listed if you were naughty or nice, he was one of the naughties.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I do think this is one of those times that the WTFs overtook the memorable, but the that opening sequence, incredible. And I also love that in the midst of this whole thing, because they briefly talk about Jesus without, you know, relating him too much to Christmas, because they say that the true meaning of Christmas was to pray that Santa didn't come for you. So they started holding a mass where they asked Christ to protect
Christ
you from
mass.
Santa.
Yes, the Christ, so
Christ mass. Christ I thought mass. That was clever.
It's like I called it Santa-splaining.
Santa-splaining.
All right, I gave this a 6. Our last category we call crazy concept.
Give it a 10.
Well, the idea of a Santa slasher movie is not crazy in and of itself. The idea of the fact that all of this stuff goes on in the Santa's movie, that is very crazy. Though that's not the reason that I get, like, I can't score it high for that reason. I'm only going to be able to give it a 4 for crazy concept, just because a Santa slasher movie is not that crazy.
Santasploitation is kind of a broad genre. Like, there is more than one movie in that.
It's not a Jewsploitation movie. Yes. Yeah.
Well, in some ways it is, because Goldberg is, anyways.
Agreed. Is it a Goldberg exploitation movie?
Yeah, exactly.
Agreed. 4.
All right.
Thank you. Now go fuck yourself. What a fucking whore. What a great line that is. look, when you say Killer Santa, no. Killer Santa, who's a demon, even that, I mean, Krampus, and even though the Krampus movies came out after this, the legend has been around for a while. So none of that is. But when you say Santa had to be nice for 1,000 years and now he's going to be mean because he lost curling to an angel, now you're talking a little crazy. So it's not the highest, but it's not the lowest. I'm giving it a 6.
All right. I think there's enough weird ass stuff piled into this to go a little higher. So I ended up on a 7 for crazy concept. All right, that wraps up the balloting, and that brings us to the secret modifiers. Every season we have 6 secret modifiers. This film has 2. It gets a -1 for what we call hide the nog, because I could not find any instance of someone drinking a festive beverage in this. There is a big thing of, like, is either nog or it's punch, but nobody drinks it. So
it is drowning it.
It does get a +1 for having actual carolers, though. So we have a Christmas carol being sung on screen, and in this case by actual carolers. So
our holiday carolers, yeah.
I like it. Are they really holiday carolers? Like, let's be honest about that one. It's not like they.
We have a movie taking place on New Year's Eve, and I'd like to think if they sing the traditional New Year's Eve song, what's it called again?
Auld Lang Syne.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that would qualify, but that's not technically a Christmas caroler.
It is not. It's not a carol. Well, yes. Okay. Do we have time to get into what constitutes a carol? Or should we wrap this up?
No, I'm sure we do not.
I have to go watch Black Christmas 2. So.
All right. So a -1 and a +1 gets us a final total of 68 out of 100.
Nice, respectable score. I actually thought this would be lower. So
puts it in the top half.
I think we all realized how great a movie this is as we talked about it. So.
Well, and that's the thing is, it's like, I had so much, like, even if this movie didn't score high in Boogaloo, it would have been worth the watch because it was a lot of fun to see.
Yes. This is a great fun movie that I highly recommend for anybody of fans of Boogaloo, for sure. All right, moving on. So, why don't you tell us where they can find us on the internet, please.
All right. Our home base is wetalkpodcasts.com, and you can find all of our episodes on there. Follow them on Twitter and Facebook to stay up to date as episodes go up. And if you're on Instagram, you can follow us at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo and use the hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Spelled the same both times.
That's Boogaloo spelled Boogaloo. Excellent.
And subscribe any place that you like getting your podcasts. And we do post these episodes on YouTube as well, if that is your preferred platform.
You can watch that, and then you can watch Santa Slay back to back. All right. So next, we are going to be talking about The Great Rupert, a Jimmy Durante film that I know absolutely nothing about. So I am very interested to watch that one. because I know it is going to be completely different from Santa's sleigh. So we are going all over the place with this holiday season.
You know what? I'd call this a virtual sequel to Santa's sleigh.
Thematic sequel,
it's the same themes.
it's been a good day. It's always a good day when you can share some boogaloo with your buddies. All right, so look forward to episode 3 of Holodamned, the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, talking about the Great Rupert. So for my buddy Nick, for Jack, and for Jim, I am 8th Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Grandpa, I want the truth about Christmas.
If it's the truth you want, then it's the scary truth you're gonna have.
According to the Book of Claus, Santa, Satan's only son, lost a bet and was forced to spread Christmas cheer. But now, all bets are off.
Yes, there is a Santa Claus. Ho, ho, hoes.
Santa Claus is not a myth or a legend. He's real. Only he's not bearing gifts and presents anymore.
Christmas can sure scare the dickens out of people.
He's scary yet educational.
I'm just trying to spread a little Yuletide fear.
Are you saying Santa is offing everyone who's naughty and nice?
Oh, my God! Nicholas shot him!
You shot Santa?
Run away! Santa's on the loose!
This holiday season...
Ho, ho, ho!
Lock your doors. Both the windows.
Aw, Grandpa got run over by a reindeer.
Everyone stand back. Things are about to get a little messy.
And block the chimney. Cause naughty or nice, Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa's sleigh.
Go ahead, kid. Let's see what Santa got you.
I hate children.